This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 71. Good day, and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books. Whether it's epic fantasy or urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, or anything else you might look for in between, you can find the best and brightest authors from all those corners of the fantasy book world here on the show. Coming up to kick off this week's episode, I want to talk a little bit about what I've been up to. I'm still working on the eighth book in my Extreme Medical Services series. It has a title now, and it'll be called The Paramedic's Mage, and will follow the continued adventures of the supernatural paramedic Dean Flynn. I'm super excited to continue as well, following the launch of the final book in the Broken Throne series. Mended Throne just came out last week. It's doing pretty awesome, and people are picking it up, and that's really great. I also have another book that'll be launching at the end of this week called Cybers Underground, which will also wrap up another series I've had going. The Sapiens Run trilogy is now complete when that gets released on Friday. Cybers Underground is book three in the series, and I'm also anticipating that the audiobook will be out in a few weeks as well, as I just heard back from the narrator, Sarah Geis, about that. So I'm excited. As always, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to, make sure you check out my fan group. It's a group for people that love all kinds of fantasy books, not just mine. And you can find them over at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. Also on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. And I do have a Facebook author page as well, which is facebook.com/jamiedavisbooks. But wherever you reach out to me, I'd love to hear from you. I look forward to that. So please get in touch. So coming up on this week's show, our author is M.C. Cologne. She was born in Cheyenne, Wyoming, though she currently lives in Italy with her husband, two youngest children, and their dog. She's a fantasy genre enthusiast with an eclectic collection of interests. She enjoys writing her stories in her home and hopes to continue writing for decades to come. We talk about her Anathasian Realm series, audiobooks that she's made, and more about her writing in this episode. So check it out. Her first book, Deceived, kicks off the series and is followed by Perseverance. And the latest book, book three in the series, Bindings, will be available early in 2020. So that's coming up soon. And we have links to her first two books in the show notes for this episode, so you can check them out. But in the meantime, let's get into this episode with MC. MC Cologne, it's great to have you here on the Books and Authors Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's fantastic. Now, I'm here in the U.S., but I believe you're overseas in Italy. Isn't that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Nice. Living abroad like that and kind of getting that experience, I'm sure, is exciting. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself so we understand, you know, why are you living abroad and what the thought process is for you and your family and life and your writing, and just get it kicked off with a little bit about you.
All right. Well, I grew up in Wyoming. It really is a state, and there really are people that live there. After I graduated high school, I joined the military, and my first duty station was overseas in Germany. So I spent my first 2 years over there, and I absolutely loved it. Fast forward about 15 years or so, and I met my husband, and we got married, and he works for Lockheed Martin. And his contract was coming to an end. He's a defense contractor. And he had been applying for some different contracts in the Colorado Springs area. And we just couldn't find one. And he comes home one night and he says, "Well, babe, what do you think about Israel?" And I said, "Well, sure." you haven't found a contract around here. There's no way they're going to send us overseas. That's really expensive to send us overseas. Comes home a few weeks later and says, hey, babe, we're moving to Israel. I went, oh, dang. So in 2016, we moved overseas to Israel, and that was when I got to really spend time on my books. I started writing in 2011 when I was pregnant with our son, and I rewrote my first book, Deceived, roughly six times. When I got to stay home and be a single parent in Israel, I finally got it published. And in 2000, because I just really got to spend the time on it and really edit it and get it finished. And then this last year in 2018, the contract came open for us to move to Italy, and we got to move here to Milan. And we're loving it. 2 years in Israel was amazing. We lived right on the beach in Tel Aviv. We got to go to Jerusalem a few times, got to spend the holidays in Bethlehem, Galilee, all over the place. So it was really cool. And now we're doing the same thing here in Italy.
Fantastic. That sounds exciting, even though I know it sounded like it was a little bit of a surprise to find out that this was where you were going to be for the next little while. But that's exciting.
Yeah, my parents are like, oh, my God, you're taking my grandkids. You're all going to die. We're like, I don't think it's that serious.
Yeah, and I can attest that people do live in Wyoming. My wife's cousin and his wife and family are all in Jackson. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There are people that live there. We've been to see them. We've visited.
Is that even a place? Yes, it's a place. Yes, we only have 500,000 people, but it is a place. And there are actual people there.
And it's a beautiful part of the country, especially, I think, to grow up out there. I never get tired of traveling to that part of the U.S., you know, the Colorado, northern Colorado, Wyoming, mm-hmm. Idaho, all that whole area there.
Yeah, my husband grew up in the inner city of Cleveland. And so when he comes out to Wyoming, he's like, they invented wind here. What is up with all this wind?
There's nothing to stop it. That's what's up. Fantastic. So you said you kind of decided to get the bug and start writing, but has this been something that you've always wanted to do from an early age, or is this something that came on later in life?
I guess it kind of came on later in life. From a very young age, I've always loved to read. And the bigger the book, the better. Books that are 100 or 200 page books, they kind of annoy me because I can read those in a day or two. And then it just kind of takes all the fun out of it because it's over before it starts. And for me, reading is like watching a movie. I get so into it that I can just see the characters if it's a good book. And so I like to get invested in the book and in the characters and what's going on in the book. When I was in the third grade, I read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, or Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, and Custer's Last Stand, and Black Beauty for fun, because I had nothing better to do as an 8 and 9 year old kid.
That's quite an eclectic collection of books to read.
Yeah. I was bored, and we didn't have a lot of money, so it was all hand-me-down books. So they were, yeah.
Well, but I mean, and I'm not faulting the selection. They're classics. I mean, I've read them all as well, and I, you know, I don't fault it. It's just an interesting grouping, I guess.
Yeah, they were pretty strange. By the time I was in the sixth grade, I was going into sixth grade. I read all of the Louis L'Amour books out of the public library in our little town. I read all of the Love Comes Softly books, and I had found another series. And my mom was like, geez, will you just find something else to do? Because I must have read 30 books that summer.
So I have a question. Is it like a requirement in Wyoming to have Louis L'Amour books in all the public libraries? Is it just like a Western
thing? Yeah, I think so.
I would imagine that's probably a big on the librarian's collection list for
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
So what got you into reading fantasy and stuff like that? I mean, because that's a leap from, you know, that type of historical story that you had been reading.
Right. So in sixth grade, I had an English teacher, Mr. Trout, and he had these required readings that we had to read. And we read Hatchet, and we read Magic Kingdom for Sale Sold. And those are the only two books that I remember. And we had a new one like every couple of months. So I'm sure there was like a dozen books that we read that year. But those were the two that I remember. And the Magic Kingdom for Sale Sold by Terry Brooks, just, I fell in love. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
It's a great book. I mean, it's so much fun.
It is. In fact, I've listened to it on audiobook since a couple of times, just because I fell in love with the series. Even as an adult. So it was just it hooked me. And then I read fantasy and Stephen King, and I found out that there were all these other genres of books to read other than Louis L'Amour. And so I like the fantasy with the horses and the knights and the warring. I like some of the sci-fi, but I like more of the historical fantasy, for lack of a better term, the epic fantasy.
Right. That classic European medieval kind of feel fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are generally my favorite. Generally.
Well, and it shows. I mean, having read, I just started reading Deceived, and it's, you know, I'm enjoying it. It's definitely got that epic fantasy feel. Lots of great narrative that brings you into the understanding the characters and the world and stuff like that. It's got all of the things I think people would be looking for in that epic fantasy type of story.
Thank you.
Is this a story that you kind of you carried with you for a while, or did it come to you after you decided, I think I'm going to sit down and try to write something?
It was before. I had read The Wheel of Time and the Sword of Truth series. And what was the other one? There was a couple of other ones that I had read. But The Wheel of Time, the Aes Sedai, I love the Aes Sedai, but I was like, you know, they're just not right. And I love the Wheel of Time series. But I was like, you know, he could have done so much more with the Aes Sedai. And they were, I thought there was more of a story with them. And so then I thought about them and thought about them and thought about them. And this was kind of my take on my twist on what I would have done with the Aes Sedai without them really being Aes Sedai, because they're not. They're not Aes Sedai.
I can see I can see the similarities. It's you know, now that you talk about it, you know, there's definitely, you've definitely not taken from it, but borrowed some similar tropes that are common in other fantasy books and put your own twist on it. And I think twist is a great way to put it, because, you know, that there's, You know, there's even, I love the Wheel of Time series too. In fact, I'm like so super excited. They just started principal photography on the series for Amazon. So, you know, that's got me all wired. Every Wednesday, they have a Wheel of Time Wednesday on Twitter, and I'm like, you know, searching the hashtag to see what new news has come out. So, but I, you know, the Aes Sedai has a lot to them, but I can see where there might be some areas that could be fleshed out or adjusted or made different and I see that kind of link to some of the things you've done in your book. So that's interesting. The characters, you know, that one of the things, if you've ever listened to the Wheel of Time audiobooks, I don't know if you have or not, but at the end of some of them, there's an interview with Robert Jordan where it's the same interview in every one, but it's basically what gave you the idea for this story and where did it come from? And, you know, he talks a lot about that concept of the somebody coming into a small farming village and saying, we need you to become the chosen ones or ones. And, you know, come on, pack up everything. You're coming with us. And, and how he thought that was like, so, you know, in so many stories was not the way he would have done it. So that's why he wrote The Wheel of Time, was to kind of address that, his issues with some other people's addressing of that. I like your take on it, which is this, an idea of, you know, the young people coming from an area to seek out their destiny. But there's a different twist on that entirely from what he did, and different from what everybody else has done in the past. So I like the idea of it's not the kids that necessarily are reluctant to seek out things, but their elders are protective of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've got their whole, and you've got two sets of heroes, and you'll see it more in the second and third books, where you've got two sets of heroes. You've got the youth that are their own set, and they've got their own trials and tribulations that they've got to overcome, and they've got their own things that they're going to have to overcome and do, and they're going to really, they've got some really cool things that they're going to be doing. But then you've got the tower leaders that are the main heroes, and they're doing some amazing things that only they can do. And I can't wait for you to read the second and third book.
Well, I'm excited too. I mean, and I think it's interesting because you can explore those kind of things, because like you said earlier, you know, you don't like the shorter format fantasy story. You want this epic, broad, you know, sweeping. I can just see that in what I've already started on. And it's clear that, you know, just based on what you just said, that there's so much room for you to have two sets of heroes and different things going on in different parts of the world at the same time. And there may or may not be causality and relationships between them that you'll discover. And that's the kind of thing that just sucks people in from a reader standpoint, because they know there's got to be something that links them. You just don't know what it is yet. And so you have to discover what that is.
Yeah. And it's cool. And they're all tied together
So, I mean, just from a writing perspective, I mean, you said, you know, you really worked over Deceived, you know, that was the one you kind of poured your heart into and rewrote six times. And I think that's a common theme I hear from a lot of authors, myself included, you know, writing that first book, it takes a lot longer to get through book one and then book two, because you've got a process at that point, it gets a little bit easier, maybe not easy, but easier. Did you find that to be the case?
Yeah, and the first version of Deceived versus the published version of Deceived are almost unrecognizable. The story evolved so much to get it to where it needed to be, because I didn't know what I was doing. I had never other than term papers and which I'm pretty creative on my term papers. I'm actually really creative on my term papers, but I had never undertaken writing creative literature before. So the scope of the project that I was taking on and the amount of background experience that I had going into it, looking back, I was a little ambitious and not nearly prepared enough with my first, second, or third draft. So I completely rewrote it at least twice. And then I did really heavy edits another two times. So it was essentially rewritten almost six times. My husband was ready to, like, throttle me. In fact, I think he refused to read it the last time because he was so sick of rereading the book.
I have a spouse that's like that. At least they do read it at least the first two or three times, right?
Right. That was our deal. He told me, I was like, well, you know, I really want to write this novel, but I'm nervous. I don't want people to laugh at me. And he's like, well, if you write it, I promise I won't laugh. And we were dating at the time, and I'm like, you promise? He goes, I promise. He's like, I'm in Afghanistan. I can laugh, and she'll never know the difference. And I'm like, all right. So I wrote it, and then I would send him a chapter at a time as I was going. And he didn't laugh, at least not to my face, while we were going through all of this. But yeah, I think the last time he refused to edit again, because he had edited, like, again, six times. So,
but you know, it is nice to have that I call my wife my primary beta reader. She's, you know, mm-hmm. She's the one that I hand it to. Even now with multiple series that I have under my belt, when I start a new series and a new main character and a new plot and things like that, I hand it to her when I'm done and then just say, does this work? And I can fix the writing. I can fix the writing, but does the story work? Because that's the part that you get so immersed in a project. Sometimes you can't see the plot holes and the things that are existing in your mind, not on the page. They never made it out onto the page, and you don't realize that all the time.
Well, I got to my third book, and he read it, and he goes, "Hun, you must have been mad at me because this one character is just a man hater, and you need to fix her because she does not fit with the last two books." And I'm like, "I wasn't mad at you." That much. So yes, he is invaluable.
It's funny how life creeps into our books in certain projects at certain times in our lives. Because right. I've had things that have, you know, certain books have colored a certain way because of things that are happening to me or my family or the world around me. I tend to write that there's always an underlying theme that I find creeping in based upon some external or internal thing going on in my life.
So I apparently had written her way too harshly, so I had to fix her. So I fixed her. But it's like, well, apparently I didn't do that right.
Yeah. When I was in the midst of dealing with my youngest daughter, who was a teenager at the time, I got accused of writing one of my heroines just way too whiny, and I and looking back on it, you know, after I fixed that and made her more heroic and self-determinant and things that needed to happen to make this character right, I realized what had happened. And not that I love my youngest daughter to death. I mean, she's just wonderful. And she was just like every other teenage girl at that age, and not mm-hmm. any more whiny or less whiny than any of them. But because I, you know, am essentially, because I work from home, a stay-at-home parent, I had to deal with a lot of that. And so it's just funny to see how that just
But they're amazing, aren't they?
Yes.
I have a 14-year-old.
So you know.
It's amazing.
But the beauty of raising, you know, a son and two daughters is that I can write angsty teen. I've got it down because I was the stay-at-home parent. I dealt with all that stuff. And my wife did when she was able, but she worked out of the house and was, you know, out of the house for 10 hours a day. So, right. You know, it was on me to take them to things and make sure things got done and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's fun. You know, I noticed you had an audiobook. You have your least first, is book two an audiobook as well?
Yes.
Yeah, what's that experience like for you? Because that's something that's been just a wonderful experience for me, just to hear somebody else reading my words. That I really enjoyed that part of it.
Yes, I get people ask me, "Oh, are you reading it?" No one wants to hear my voice for 17 hours. Nobody wants to hear that. Not my husband, not my kids, and not my audience. I have a fantastic narrator that I hire, and she does an absolutely wonderful job, I think, especially since she's willing to read my book for 17 plus hours.
Well, and you get to hear, I don't know if this is the case with you, but I find I hear things in my book I didn't even realize I wrote there, you know, that they've interpreted it and added inflection to just a simple sentence that brings out this hidden meaning that I didn't even realize it was there. But when you hear it performed that way, it makes perfect sense.
Yep. It's amazing. I love it being on audio. I actually, with being a stay-at-home mom and trying to write and trying to drive around Milan, Italy, or Tel Aviv, Israel, I don't have time to read actual paper books anymore, which is the saddest thing that I think has ever happened to me. So now I do all of my reading via audiobook. So it was really important to me to get my books done on audio. And I drugged my feet on my second book, and I don't even really know how that happened. I think it just kind of slipped through the cracks. But when my third book comes out, I am planning on publishing and doing the narration all at the same time so that it's available all at once.
You know, you'll find a bump, I think a sales bump across the board from that, because one will support the other. I've done that. I've started doing that on my more recent projects, trying to get that audiobook to drop close to, you know, the time that the ebook and print paperback comes out. And it is one of those things I've noticed is that, you know, there are a certain number of people who come and find the book on like Amazon, and they click through and then they go, "Oh, there's an audiobook too. I love audiobooks." And so they click and get both copies. They get both the print and get both the ebook and the audiobook. And there's a certain number of people that just do that, but as a matter of course. So, you know, I would encourage you to do that if you can, because it definitely boosts sales.
Yeah. It's just not worth it to not get the audio done, especially since that's all I listen to. It doesn't make sense as an author not to provide that service for my readers. So, I don't even know why it took me so long to get the audiobook out for Perseverance, but,
But you persevered and you got it done. So
I did.
So, you know, you talked about your readers and you know, want to make sure that it sounds like you really try to serve them in many ways so they can consume the book the way they want to, whether it's in print or in audio mm-hmm. or ebook. What's the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to communicate with you or touch base with you? I know you have a Facebook page, and is there any other ways that you've found that you prefer?
They can reach out through my website, which is my www.mccologne.net. And through there, I believe, are my links for my email and for my Facebook. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
I do. I see all the links there and the contact page and everything else. So people should definitely check that out. And I will have links to all of that, including your Facebook page and your website, in the show notes for this episode so that people can find you and be able to track down your book. And you said book 3 is around the corner, maybe in 2020 sometime?
Hopefully by the end of the year, if not early January, February of next year.
Oh, awesome. So even soon, so not just all year 2020, but early 2020. That's fantastic.
Yeah, early 2020. I'm hoping the end of this year, beginning of next.
Great. And your website looks great. I'm looking over it. And is that did you have fun getting the map done for the world and stuff like that?
Yes, I have an amazing illustrator. He actually works with, he does the artwork for a lot of video games. Like World of Warcraft, or not World of Warcraft. Who does he do?
I can definitely see the kind of that kind of feel to the map, though. So I can see what you're saying. It definitely has that sort of, you know, the type of thing you might see in a video game or a computer game of a fantasy setting. But it's just wonderful to have that map, and it looks great. And it's one of those things I write mostly urban fantasy, so it's set in a modern world, and people don't generally need maps to know, you know, where Baltimore is in relationship to Boston or whatever. But, you know, for that fantasy setting, I've got an epic fantasy lurking in the back of my mind that I might be starting soon, and getting a map done is going to be key to keeping my brain straight, as well as helping the readers understand the relationships.
Right. He works on God of War and Call of Duty and Injustice too.
Awesome.
He just finished up the main cover art for Bindings for me this last... was it last week? So I am having fun playing with the cover right now.
Great.
So
that's fun too. That's like, you just get all that stuff in there. I know I love having my covers early in the process. You know, as soon as I have an idea for the book and a title, I try to get my cover designer to start working on it, because I love having the cover there to inspire me when I'm writing and editing. You know, I put it on my phone background, my laptop's background, it's everywhere. So it's like, I can't get away. And even my Apple Watch has it in the background. So it's just wherever I look, it's like, oh, the book's there. I've got to be thinking about the book. So,
oh, I'm such a dork. I still have Lord of the Rings wallpaper on my computer.
There's nothing wrong with that in my book. Oh, that's awesome. Well, MC, it's been having you here on the show, and you know, maybe when your next book comes out, Bindings, we can have you back on the show and talk a little bit about the new direction for the story and in that book, and maybe other projects or continuations of this series you have in the works down the road.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed my time here this evening, morning, you know, with all the different time zones. Thank you.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on the website for each podcast episode post, you'll find links at the top of the page to subscribe right there below the audio player. Whether you use an iOS or Android device or a particular app like Stitcher or TuneIn, you can even subscribe to get email notifications. But you don't want to miss any of the episodes because we've got some great artists coming up. I actually had a blast chatting with the amazing Ginevra Black on next week's episode, and that'll be coming out soon. Make sure you come back and check it out because it was a lot of fun chatting with her. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at my Facebook author page at Jamie Davis Books or on my website at jamiedavisbooks.com. And of course, you can also find my Fun Fantasy Readers group, which is where we talk about all kinds of fantasy books, not just mine, but whatever people are reading. And we have a great time over there chatting. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back to here for the next podcast with Ginevra Black. And in the meantime, don't forget what I remind you of all the time. Keep your eyes open, folks, because whether you know it or not, there's magic all around you.